This is Jay Sekulow. Iran, still a threat.
How significant is the conflict with radical Islam?
Radical Islam intends that all of us live under Sharia law. The enemy is radical Islam.
If Iran gets nuclear weapons, Saudi Arabia will, Egypt will, Turkey, perhaps others.
The moment the Iranians have nuclear weapons, they have a nuclear umbrella over their international terrorist capability.
That is a formula for insecurity.
And I'm telling you, target number one is Israel. The Israelis cannot abide that. It is truly an existential threat.
These 40,000 rockets and missiles on the border with Lebanon could be sprung and fired against Israel.
The more we have nuclear proliferation in the world, the more the risks are that there will be the availability of nuclear devices, the lethality of which is mind-boggling.
Is there a war going on with Iran right now?
This is the longest ongoing war in the Middle East. From almost day one, the Islamic Republic of Iran tried to obtain nuclear weapon and tried to export the revolution to proxy jihadist movement in the Middle East, trying to imitate the geniusy in the revolution of Khomeini to other places. And at the same time, the secret services of the United States and Israel declared war on Iran, and this is the clandestine war between these two forces.
Well, right now, Iran is the world's central banker to international terrorism. It funds Hamas, Hezbollah, terrorists in Afghanistan and Iraq and around the world. If you add to existing Iranian activities the capability to deliver nuclear weapons anywhere in the world, you make Iran a world power and a world threat. That's why it is legitimate for the United States, Israel, or others to take action now in self-defense to prevent Iran from continuing to violate its own treaty obligations and obtain nuclear weapons.
On every September 11, they fire rockets into Israel. Why? To commemorate 9/11, which requires us to be on guard 24/7.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Welcome to broadcast, everybody. This is a series special that we put together at the ACLJ as we celebrate the recognition of Jerusalem as the eternal capital of the state of Israel. That's all great news. But let me tell you what does not change during this entire time, and that is the regional threats. And who is the greatest regional threat? And that is Iran itself. Iran is a geopolitical threat. They are the largest exporter of terrorism in the world. They export more terrorists and more terrorist assets than any other country, even in the Islamic world. So they are the number one state sponsor of terrorism. If you look into the region, you see that with Hezbollah and Hamas. Of course, Hamas operating out of Egypt, the Negev area of the southern portion of Egypt adjacent to Israel. To the north, you have Hezbollah operating out of Syria with a standing army of 50,000 and 150,000 rockets. Iran is a serious threat. They have maintained a serious threat. But what you're going to learn on this broadcast is they're not just a threat militarily. They're a threat with what they export to the rest of the world, and that is terrorism. That is their reason for existence. They want to establish a world caliphate. Now, we did a movie on this called The Export that is as timely now as the day we did it. You know, as all these issues develop and we're able to bring you these films and documentaries and specials and bring you radio, we're very fortunate to be able to come to you each and every day with breaking news during the day. That's a big part of what we do. The fact of the matter is, Iran still is a threat. Now, they're less of a threat than they were a week ago, but they are still a threat. And what this movie shows you is the nature and scope of that threat. And we've got to be really clear that Iran is both a regional and geopolitical threat, not because just of their nuclear ambitions, but their desire to export terrorism around the globe. They view themselves as establishing the Islamic Caliphate. That's what this is all about at the end of the day. And we have to be cognizant of that fact. That is what we're dealing with when we deal with Iran. This is a great special for you to understand the nature and scope of what our country faces, what our allies face. Back with more in a moment.
This is a critical time for the Supreme Court and our nation. President Trump has nominated a brilliant jurist to fill the seat created by the retirement of Justice Kennedy. Judge Brett Kavanaugh is eminently qualified. He has extensive experience and a commitment to adhere to the rule of law and uphold the Constitution. Yet the radical left is pulling out all the stops to derail this nomination. That's why it's so critical to support this nominee. The American Center for Law and Justice is mobilizing on Capitol Hill, demanding Judge Kavanaugh's immediate confirmation. Stand with us on this critical fight. Sign on to our petition, calling on the U.S. Senate to confirm Judge Kavanaugh without delay. Add your name to our petition right now online, aclj.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
You know, part of what we do at the American Center for Law and Justice is media advocacy, and that is you're watching portions of specials that we've put together on these topics, and we do that as a form of education.
We can create a modern international community that is respectful, that is secure, that is prosperous, that there are not tensions, inevitable tensions, between cultures, which I think is extraordinarily important. That's something that's very important to me.
He really wanted this to be a new beginning of the relationship between the United States and the Muslim world. He gave what has now become known as Obama's Cairo Initiative. Perhaps foremost, he wanted me to find a way to reach out to the Muslim world and engage much more with dominantly Muslim nations.
We do not consider ourselves a Christian nation or a Jewish nation or a Muslim nation. We consider ourselves a nation of citizens.
In Iran today, thousands of demonstrators in various locations kept up their public pressure on the Shah.
Khomeini is scheduled to return to Iran Friday after 15 years in exile. Today, the 78-year-old religious leader appeared to be in an uncompromising mood.
One of the chants today was bring back Khomeini, this man, presently living in Paris.
It was over 30 years ago that the revolution took place in Iran, led by a cleric named the Ayatollah Khomeini, who had actually been exiled out of Iran under the Shah of Iran's previous regime. Now, the Shah was put in place, and while there were a number of abuses under his regime, there was stability in the region, and radical Islamists did not have a foothold of control of a government. That changed in 1979. When the Ayatollah Khomeini came in and the Shah of Iran was removed from leadership, a major change and shift took place in the region. The region became radical. And it became radical in the context of Islam. And that has shaped not only Iran, but the Middle East, and even in the United States, even today. Now, what this movie is going to do is take a look at radical Islam's conquest, its mentality for control, and the various ways that it is engaging in infiltrating the West. Now, what we've seen so far, you've heard about jihad, lawfare, nuclear programs, and terrorism. But let's break it down. What is jihad? Jihad's the holy war. How do you engage in the holy war? You use the legal system as part of it. Sure, you use airplanes and turn them into bombs and run them into buildings. You use suicide bombers. You try to take over governments. But you also use the legal system, both domestic legal systems in the United States, but international legal systems as well, including the United Nations. And then, of course, there's nuclear programs. The danger of a nuclear threat is significant. It becomes part of the terrorist ploy. but is a ploy with tremendous consequences. The situation in Iran is not that much different than 32 years later as we look at the situation in Egypt. A lot of the issues that have developed over the last several months have revolved around the fact that what role would the Muslim Brotherhood have in a government in Egypt? And the short answer to that is any role for the Muslim Brotherhood starts looking an awful lot like Ayatollah Khomeini revisited. Now, I had the chance to sit down with someone who has been to the region in the Middle East many, many times. That is Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North.
Let me ask you first your sense when you talk about radical Islam, how significant is the conflict with radical Islam and its impact it's having not only in the region, but around the globe?
Jay, it's existential for us. Radical Islam intends that all of us live under Sharia law. They are willing, and not just willing, but intend to die to make it happen. Of course, there's no greater honor than to kill an infidel in the process of getting killed yourself. And so if you look at what we've been up against, not really since 2001, actually going back to 1979, when the Ayatollah Khomeini goes back to Qom from Paris and begins to organize not the Iranian revolution, but the Islamic revolution.
Ayatollah Khomeini left Tehran and moved to Qom, which is Iran's holy city, where he lived until the Shah deported him 15 years ago and may now wish he hadn't. He said as he went he would keep control of the country, as he put it, for the 1 or 2 years he has left to live.
Ayatollah Khomeini returned to the Shah's least favorite city, Qom, where religious opposition to the Shah began.
Everybody looked at it, and I confess to being part of the Reagan administration 1981 onwards. We looked at it as, look, it's just 10% of Islam. We don't have to worry about this.
Khomeini was forced to leave Qom 15 years ago after the Shah's troops killed hundreds of people in an unsuccessful purge of dissidents. But Khomeini indicated he will maintain control and direction of the government because he believes there should be no separation of church and state. And Khomeini said he does not want a democratic republic. He wants an Islamic republic.
It has become a global threat. It's a threat right here in the United States of America, and it's growing. The enemy is radical Islam.
President of the United States goes to the University of Cairo. He says that America, although there's a lot of Christians, we're not a Christian nation. We're not a Jewish nation. He says we're a nation of principles, which is a non-statement. Then you look at the fact, what you just said, that in 1948, our leadership, the government, and others in the world understood that there was this spiritual bond, if you will. Now we have this complete shift in relationship. You've got an Iranian threat that most of us believe is real, but you've been there more than most people. You know the people involved, you know the military, you've reviewed the documents, you've seen the evidence, you've been there firsthand. How serious is the Iranian Islamic threat to world stability?
It will change the world as we know it today if the Iranians, and I believe that they're headed in this direction, put on the end of one of those North Korean-provided missiles anything that looks like a warhead. And the Iranians are building not only the warheads, they have the means of delivering it, and I'm telling you, target number one is Israel. The Israelis cannot abide that. It is truly an existential threat.
As a lawyer, I like to deal with evidence, and part of that evidence is to actually take you to the region where the conflict is developing. That is, as Oliver North just said, an existential threat in the Middle East, so we traveled to Israel, where the opportunity to talk with members of the military, members of the government, some of the leading journalists in the area, to get a first-hand look at how the threat of radical Islam and Iran impacts Israel, the region, and the world. I had a chance to sit down with one of the most noted journalists in the Middle East, Renan Bergman, to get his impact and impressions as to what's happening in the region right now as it relates to Iran and possible war and conflict with Iran.
First, very basic and fundamental question. Is there a war going on with Iran right now?
This is the longest ongoing war in the Middle East. It has been taking place since Ayatollah Khomeini took over the Islamic Republic of Iran in the 1st of February 1979. It has been going on every day until this minute. Under the public's radar, nobody knows the full details of that, but from almost day one, the Islamic Republic of Iran tried to obtain nuclear weapon and tried to export the revolution to proxy jihadist movement in the Middle East, trying to imitate the genius in the revolution of Khomeini to other places. And at the same time, the secret services of the United States and Israel declared war on Iran, and this is the clandestine war between these two forces.
Iran was a free country One has to remember, under the Shah, very advanced, very Western, very scientifically very impressive. It was taken over by this regime of fundamentalism, and really Black Knight came over Iran. So definitely America stands and works for the values that Iran is against. But there's a special role for Israel here. Iran uses rhetoric that we haven't heard for decades. Eliminating Israel. Israel should not exist, has no right to exist. Israel, I quote, is a cancerous tumor that should be removed from the Middle East. It's said again and again. So when you see a country that says you are not legitimate, you will not exist in the end of the game here, and we go nuclear and involved in terror like no other country, to put it in an understatement, it's a cause for concern.
Well, right now, Iran is the world's central banker to international terrorism. It funds Hamas, Hezbollah, terrorists in Afghanistan and Iraq and around the world. If you add to existing Iranian activities the capability to deliver nuclear weapons anywhere in the world, you make Iran a world power and a world threat. That's why it is legitimate for the United States, Israel, or others to take action now in self-defense to prevent Iran from continuing to violate its own treaty obligations and obtain nuclear weapons. It's not a desirable alternative, to be sure, but the preemptive use of military force in this case is actually far preferable to the world as it would be once Iran gets nuclear weapons.
But it's interesting in a way, you see. Let me go one step deeper. Sure. The paradigm that we knew was the paradigm of nation states. Israel is a Jewish state, they are Arab states. Now you see a religious approach. They speak not in terms of political dialogue with Israel, what the borders should be, what this policy should be, but they speak of illegitimacy in the name of God. From Iran, from Hezbollah, and from Hamas, you hear that it's a religious commandment that Israel should not exist, that a non-Muslim state cannot be here. If this has the upper hand, this trend, it's going to be tougher. This layer of religious fanaticism on top of political debates makes debates almost without a resolution. Because, you know, gods never compromise. People do. Right. If you get it from God that you can't have an enemy alive, then what hope do we have? So I think it's the interest of really world order that this new trend of making everything religious commandment and the fanaticism that goes with it loses this fight.
Back with more in a moment. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. This is a critical time for the Supreme Court and our nation. President Trump has nominated a brilliant jurist to fill the seat created by the retirement of Justice Kennedy. Judge Brett Kavanaugh is eminently qualified. He has extensive experience and a commitment to adhere to the rule of law and uphold the Constitution. Yet the radical left is pulling out all the stops to derail this nomination. That's why it's so critical to support this nominee. The American Center for Law and Justice is mobilizing on Capitol Hill, demanding Judge Kavanaugh's immediate confirmation. Stand with us on this critical fight. Sign on to our petition, calling on the U.S. Senate to confirm Judge Kavanaugh without delay. Add your name to our petition right now online, aclj.org.
don't have to be a scholar. You know, you just read Ahmadinejad's own speeches. You read their philosophy, you read their comments that they're making in public speeches in the Iranian press and international press, and it's clear. Their intention is right there. They're saying it explicitly. They deny Israel's right to exist. They basically stand against every value that you're familiar with in America, from freedom of speech to women's rights, to just about every issue. They're on the wrong side of the issue. So of course, when such a country is given nuclear capabilities, it's a concern, not only for Israel, but also to the entire community.
جنایتکار است و همه اونها با پلاکارد و مشت‌های گره کرده فریاد می‌زنند مرگ بر اسرائیل.
The statements that they make that comes out of Ahmadinejad, which is approved by the Ayatollahs, if not written by the Ayatollahs, about Israel being a cancer that needs to be removed, Hamas saying this, and Israel needs to be destroyed. Is there any doubt in your mind that when they say that, that Israel should be wiped out, that they mean it?
I don't have the luxury not to believe it. It was a mistake that we made in our history where we thought, yeah, they only say they don't mean it. How can they really do this thing like this? Can they really eliminate the people? Can they destroy people? Can they build extermination camps? Well, we don't take things easily anymore.
I think Ahmadinejad, I've often said, is one of the greatest Israeli assets we could ever have thought of, because he's so clear in what he is saying and he's so offensive in what he's saying that we don't have to explain to the world at large what it is the Iranians are about. We don't have to explain to the world what the Iranian threat is. We don't have to explain to the world what basic anti-Semitism is, the hatred of the other religion. I think this is so clear for what he's been saying. He says it better than anybody else. And I think that if we hadn't had him there, we should have made every effort to get him elected in order that he should represent Iran as it is.
We still don't get what jihad is. Jihad, whether it is done through violence or whether it's done by stealthier measures, is always and everywhere about Sharia. It's about the implementation of Sharia, the spread of Sharia, and the defense of Sharia. Sharia is the Islamic legal and political framework. We would like to think of Islam as just another religion, you know, just a set of religious principles that's separate from our secular societal life. It's anything but. It's a full-service, comprehensive, political, social, and economic system, a military system, that happens to have some spiritual elements, but its ambitions are actually authoritarian in the sense that you have a central Islamic state that controls everything, and it's totalitarian in the sense that it really does want to control everything.
Is every it geopolitical aspect, in scope?
Yes, absolutely. Every aspect of life. The threat to us is much bigger and broader than just terrorism. And it's really a march through our institutions, whether it's our political institutions, the law, our whole society.
There is a law in Sharia that says it's obligatory for a Muslim to lie if the purpose is obligatory. So if your purpose is
it
to
authorizes
do,
under Sharia law the ability to lie to get the end mean.
It doesn't authorize it. It obliges you.
You
to
must.
Lie. You must lie if your purpose is to promote Islam.
And this is called taqiyya?
It's called taqiyya, but it's more than that. It becomes automatic in our character as Muslims to defend Islam. The reputation of Islam, its ability to grow, is the most important thing. Islam is always looking at growth in numbers. And the key thing about Sharia, which makes it even worse than if you leave it in the hands of government, is that any Muslim who recognizes that a person has committed apostasy,
which means just leaving the religion,
you will be forgiven if you kill them.
An apostate Muslim is worse than an infidel. They can tolerate a Christian or a Jew as the people of the book, although barely. But even if they can tolerate those, they must never tolerate an apostate, somebody who turned his back on Islam. He is as good or she is as good as dead, and they would rather kill him than see them becoming embracing the Christian faith.
In order to get a firsthand understanding of what it means to live under an Islamic regime, but also to understand what radicalization means to the region, I thought it'd be good to talk to someone that came from that environment, that knew it firsthand, not just reading about it, but from personal experience. Taz Sada has actually served in that regime. Now he, of course, is the founder of a great ministry called Seeds of Hope right there in the Middle East. Prior to this, he served as a sniper for Yasser Arafat.
Islam have an agenda, a very clear agenda, Islamizing the world. Absolutely. And they're going to implement Sharia law. Sharia law is the toughest laws you'll ever encounter in your life. They are able to implement that in London, in England. And they are working on that in America.
Peace in their mind is not between, let's say, Muslims and infidels. Peace is when infidels live under the umbrella of Islam. And this, the conquest, brings peace in the mind. Theoretically, there cannot be, between Islamic State or the Caliphate State and other infidel states. Eternal war should be between them. Peace can reign only when everybody comes under the umbrella of Islam.
Israel is preparing for a war. If you go to the Air Force fields, if you go to Army secret camps, if you go to special units, if you go to the Chief of Staff in Tel Aviv, you would see people preparing for war, preparing for a strike on Iran and the possible outcomes of such a strike, or preparing for Iran trying to burn the area in order to divert attention from the nuclear project.
One of the most dangerous areas of the region in the Middle East is the border between Israel and Lebanon. Lebanon, of course, is now controlled by Hezbollah, and that means you've got a radical Islamist government controlling actual government facilities, including the military. Two Israeli soldiers were recently killed in the very area where we are now at. In putting this documentary together, we wanted to talk to those that are not only talking about the conflict, that are doing strategy about the conflict, but actually to soldiers who are engaged in the conflict.
So we've had this situation, we talked about this with the lack of uniforms, it's a different kind of warfare. They're hiding out in villages.
Yes.
How do you go about defending your country when they're engaged in this kind
of activity? Well, like I said before, it's very hard. We try to learn on a daily basis what kind of movement is a citizen movement, what kind of movement doesn't serve any cause except Hezbollah tasks. And we know from all certain places what houses they own, what houses they would like to take over in a battle day.
Is it house to house?
Yes, yes. They can. They live among the citizens. The citizens, you can see a Hezbollah house, regular people house, and we had something in battle days before. The citizens just leave the villages, and it becomes a little war zone inside the village.
Well, you got a real sense of what we could do with our media advocacy. We did that in films. Back with more in a moment.
This is a critical time for the Supreme Court and our nation. President Trump has nominated a brilliant jurist. Judge Brett Kavanaugh is eminently qualified. The American Center for Law and Justice is mobilizing on Capitol Hill, demanding Judge Kavanaugh's immediate confirmation. Sign on to our petition calling on the U.S. Senate to confirm Judge Kavanaugh without delay. Add your name to our petition right now online, aclj.org.
This is Jay Sekulow. We've got a special report with our team from Jerusalem.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
A
alongside Egypt and Jordan, with whom we've already made peace, others in the Arab world are moving forward. They recognize that Israel is not their enemy, but their indispensable ally in fighting militant Islam. They view Israel as their partner for ensuring a peace and a future and security and prosperity.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
It's time that the Palestinians will embrace this approach too. And if they do, they will find in Israel and in me an enthusiastic partner for building a peaceful and prosperous future for both our peoples. It's within our reach.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the broadcast. And this is a special broadcast because we've got our team from our office in Jerusalem here in our media center. So I want to first start by welcoming not only our audience from around the country and around the world, but also welcome our Director General, Rami Levy, who's been with us on this. You've heard him many, many times. First time a lot of you are seeing him. Rami, of course, runs our office in Jerusalem. Rami and I have been working together for almost two decades, a long time. David Benjamin is senior counsel for the ACLJ's office in Jerusalem, also works with the Israeli Defense Forces, an expert on international law. David's been on the broadcast again many times, but first time in the studio. So great to have both of you here. Stuart Roth, of course, senior counsel, one of the founders of the ACLJ, and has done a lot of work in our office in Israel. I want to start with letting everybody know what the broadcast is about today. We will take your calls on the issue of Israel. And in this context, your support for Israel, we think, is critical. There's a lot of issues going on right now. One issue that is getting not as much attention as it deserves is that $18 million of the United Nations budget has been allocated to the Palestinian Authority for the purposes of engaging in what's called lawfare. That is taking Israel to international tribunals. We've handled those cases at the International Criminal Court in The Hague. Remember this, the United States funds about 22% of the UN budget. So almost at least $3.5 million of that money going to the Palestinian Authority to sue Israeli organizations and pro-Israel groups is being funded by us, the American taxpayer. We'll take your calls on all of this. We want to know about your support for Israel at 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. Let me start with this. This is the 100th anniversary of what's called the Balfour Declaration. That was a declaration issued by Lord Balfour, James Balfour, to Lord Rothschild, and that was regarding the establishment of a Jewish state. It was on November 2nd, 1917. It reads as follows. It's to dear Lord Rothschilds, I have much pleasure in conveying to you on behalf of His Majesty's government the following declaration of sympathy with the Jewish Zionist aspirations, which has been submitted to and approved by the Cabinet. His Majesty's government views with favor the establishment in Palestine of a national home for the Jewish people and will use their best endeavors to facilitate the achievement of this object, it being clearly understood that nothing shall be done which may prejudice the civil and religious rights of existing non-Jewish communities in Palestine or the rights and political status enjoyed by Jews in any other country. I should be grateful if you would bring this declaration to the knowledge of the Zionist Federation. Yours sincerely, Arthur James Balfour. That declaration has created a body of literature and a body of law. I mean, just two paragraphs, and it has created a well-known body of law. Jordan, go ahead.
Yeah, that's right. So I think on this 100th anniversary, and as Israel approaches 70 years of independence as well, we just celebrated the 50-year reunification of Jerusalem over the summer. So a lot of key moments happening right now for the Jewish state of Israel. I mean, again, Balfour Declaration, the 100 years. 70 years of Israel as a Jewish state, 50 years of Israel with its heart, Jerusalem, as its capital, all within this last year.
All right, so we come back from the break. We'll be joined by our experts from our offices in Jerusalem, and we will also take your calls at 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. We want to know what you think about the situation for Israel, support of Israel. 1-800-684-3110. Let me also tell you this. We don't talk about it as often as we should. We have a full operating office right in the heart of Jerusalem, dealing with Israel, but also the region. We're going to get into all of that when we come back from the break. 1-800-684-3110. Back with more, including your calls, in just a moment.
This is a critical time for the Supreme Court and our nation. President Trump has nominated a brilliant jurist to fill the seat created by the retirement of Justice Kennedy. Judge Brett Kavanaugh is eminently qualified. He has extensive experience and a commitment to adhere to the rule of law and uphold the Constitution. Yet the radical left is pulling out all the stops to derail this nomination. That's why it's so critical to support this nominee. The American Center for Law and Justice is mobilizing on Capitol Hill, demanding Judge Kavanaugh's immediate confirmation. Stand with us on this critical fight. Sign on to our petition, calling on the U.S. Senate to confirm Judge Kavanaugh without delay. Add your name to our petition right now online, aclj.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. I read for you the Balfour Declaration, which was one of the founding documents for the what we would call the modern state of Israel. But there's a lot of happening in the region. We're joined in our studios today by David Benjamin, senior counsel for the ACLJ in our Jerusalem office, Rami Levy, who, of course, is our director general in our office in Jerusalem, Stuart Roth, one of our founders and one of the lawyers that does a tremendous amount of work in our offices around the world, but also in Jerusalem. And Jordan, of course, is with me as well. I want to start with, and we're taking your calls, of course, at 1-800-684-3110. Let's talk about first, I think this is important. We mentioned this briefly when we were talking to our Facebook and Periscope audience, but Rami, I think it's important for everybody to know. Iran is playing a very pronounced and different role in the region than it has, but there's a historical connection. You were talking about this 2,500 years ago, Iran dominated the region. Let's talk about that for a moment.
Exactly. Well, you know, when we look at the nation's capabilities and the nation's intentions, if you connect them, the two together, then you see what the threat is. The threat of Iran is the fact that the intentions of the leaders, as they've said it many times, is to destroy the state of Israel and to rule the entire Middle East and get to the Mediterranean. If you look at the actions, the Iran is using proxies. They have two different approaches. One is to the south, to Yemen, to the Houthis, who are Shiites, and the other one, they're going through Iraq, to Syria, to Lebanon, and Saudi Arabia is right in the middle. What's happening now with the Iran is that the intentions are being exposed, the puzzle is seen, and the Sunni countries, Saudi Arabia and the Gulf countries and Jordan, understand that if they don't, they're not going to work together with Israel, they're the next ones to be blocked and taken over by Iran.
Yeah, but David, you also have a unique situation right now that I keep talking about, and that is you have Shia Iran in partnership with Sunni Hamas. Which makes, because normally they're fighting with each other, the Sunni-Shia split, but they've got their common enemy here.
They make strange bedfellows. Hamas has been shopping for support around the Middle East. It was, for a while, it had Turkey, for a while it had Qatar. For various reasons, these countries have backed off. Iran was supporting Hamas a while back, and it seems that Hamas has gone back into the, let's call it the clutches of Iran.
Yep.
And it suits Iran very well to have this outpost here. Adds just another front that Israel has to face of Iran. In fact, almost from all sides.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about the kind of the dimensional aspect of this. When you think about the Middle East, you got to think nine dimensionally, because Israel's defending its borders on every border. I mean, it's not just one side here. But Stuart, we've seen over the last 10 years and we've been going over to Israel a lot and doing a lot work over there for decades, that the alliances that have been developed over the last, I would say, 2 years, 3 years, within the Gulf states and some of the other portions of the world, have made, as David said, kind of interesting bedfellows. You've got the Gulf states and Jordan, Egypt, Saudi Arabia in basically partnership with Israel because of the Iranian threat.
Well, absolutely, because Israel's two problems on both sides of the country are Hezbollah and Hamas, the two terrorist groups that are being supported by Shiite Iran. Well, that creates an alliance, a natural alliance between Israel and Egypt, and Egypt also has a Hamas issue, and Israel and Saudi Arabia. So it's bringing those countries closer together. And Egypt and Saudi Arabia will be the key. If there's going to be any peace between the Israelis and the Palestinians, it's going to be because of pressure put upon the Palestinians by Saudi Arabia and Egypt,
you know,
because it's Iran issue.
Yeah, Benjamin Netanyahu just addressed this about the Balfour Declaration, gave a Balfour speech, but he talked about Egypt and Jordan. Take a listen.
Alongside Egypt and Jordan, with whom we've already made peace, others in the Arab world are moving forward. They recognize that Israel is not their enemy, but their indispensable ally in fighting militant Islam. They view Israel as their partner for ensuring a peace and a future and security and prosperity.
We are developing this issue for a long time. Our last major book we had was called Unholy Alliance. It was about Syria, Iran, and Russia. Our most current, the book that's out now, Jerusalem, it gets into this whole issue. So this will be the third installment of a series we did. One was Rise of ISIS. The second was Unholy Alliance. The final book in that trilogy of books is the book that's out now, Jerusalem. And you look at these issues, folks, and understand that it's complex. It is a complex environment in the Middle East, and it's made more complex when you've got these different factions and factors coming in. So we're taking your calls and comments at 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110.
Yeah, we do have some comments coming in first. Sylvia on Facebook asked that common question, which is, should we just stop funding the UN? I think we answered that pretty quickly, which is the U.S. is not going to give up its veto power at the UN Security Council to stop the really bad actions. It's one thing to look at the General Assembly resolutions, even the $18 million that we've talked about, but ultimately we have a power to veto on our own unilaterally any kind of really military action that the UN may take. On that, we can also build alliances. So I don't think we're going to stop funding. There are elements within the UN, like pulling out of UNESCO. That's what you do. You send signals like that individually. And I think we can answer, again, Yolanda's question. Also, this is an interesting one. Are our tax dollars funding the Palestinians?
You get to about a half a billion dollars a year. And that's direct. That's not through the United Nations. That's direct. And that U.S. aid has generally had not a lot of strings attached to it. So, you bring up this idea, and we'll get into in the next segment of the broadcast, is kind of allowing funding to fight us in court. But the Palestinian Authority right now, I think it's important for Rami, you first, then David. This is not one unified government. It's a coalition government between basically Hamas and Fatah. But let's define who they are, first of all. That when you see Mahmoud Abbas, he's the head of the Palestinian Authority, but that's just the beginning of the story. It's not the end of it.
Exactly. That's where when we speak about a two-state solution, Benjamin Netanyahu always speaks about, well, it's a three-state solution because Gaza has actually become a state of its own. Hamas has actually thrown PLO out of Gaza about 10 years ago and ruled since and did whatever it wanted to. So when you look today, even at the reconciliation, it's very hard to believe that it's going to work. And Israel cannot rely and give its security in the hands of Hamas. So
David, who's within the Hamas, following up what Rami said, you got Fatah, which is supposed to be the more moderate, right? I mean, and they were the Palestinian Liberation Organization. And then you got Hamas, the terrorist. And I think they both have their, you know, neither one of these groups are moderate. But in practice, as a lawyer, as we deal with, how do you negotiate with a party when the parties aren't unified and it's not a government speaking with one voice?
I mean, what you've touched on is the main reason why, at this stage at least, it's so difficult to go forward with a peace process. Because even if you can agree to reach some sort of agreement with some of the Palestinians, a large a large number of others will do everything they can to derail the agreement. Now, just to put any doubt aside, Hamas made absolutely clear that in their reconciliation with the Palestinian Authority, they have not in any sense given up their idea of wiping out Israel, even though the Palestinian Authority has demanded this of them. It's not exactly clear on what common ground this reconciliation has taken place. And of course, it's not the first attempt. So whether this will even last is something.
But you need to understand, the reason we're going into it is this is how complex it is. So these are two factions that would fight with each other, that don't have a unified theory on how to move forward. And the end result is, I mean, this is what you have to really look at, is the target is still Israel, and you're trying to start a negotiation with parties that are calling for your extermination.
If you want to talk to us on air, we're live. The number you call, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. It's a great time to ask this team of experts questions about Israel. Mary's got one calling from Maryland online, too. Mary, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Mary. You're on the air.
Thank you so much for all you do. This is just a quick note that I'd like to make. I wish that the government would defund the United Nations to the extent that they are funding this lawfare for the Palestinians.
So we're going to get into the lawfare issue when we come back from the break. It's, you know, in the UN budget, it's not a big number, but it's $18 million. But let me tell you something. As lawyers and government affairs officials that defend Israel and Israel's right to exist and have to deal with these groups, the fact of the matter is, and this is just the fact of the matter, these groups are, it's our money, U.S. taxpayer dollars, are going to the Palestinian Authority, Stuart, to fight us in The Hague.
Well, absolutely. I think it's getting back to the whole theme. There's so much dysfunction there. And we talk about Palestinian state. You know, the reality is that I think the goal should be peace first between the Palestinians and the Israelis, and then steps to a Palestinian state when they can prove that they can govern themselves. But they're so chaotic, they're so dysfunctional, that if there was a Palestinian state at this place and time, they'd probably have a civil war erupt between the two of them and destabilize the entire region.
We're going to talk more about the region, what can be done, what is being done. The issue is Israel. We want your comments. What do you think the policy should be? 1-800-684-3110. And if you ever had questions, we've got two of our experts from our office in Jerusalem, David Benjamin, Rami Levy. So we want you to call with your comments at 1-800-684-3110. Let me also say your support for the ACLJ helps us fund our office in Jerusalem, your voice right there in the Holy Land. Again, you go to ACLJ.org. We're in a matching challenge campaign. Any amount you donate, we get a matching gift for ACLJ.org. Back with more, including your calls at 800-684-3110.
It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. This is a critical time for the Supreme Court and our nation. President Trump has nominated a brilliant jurist to fill the seat created by the retirement of Justice Kennedy. Judge Brett Kavanaugh is eminently qualified. He has extensive experience and a commitment to adhere to the rule of law and uphold the Constitution. Yet the radical left is pulling out all the stops to derail this nomination. That's why it's so critical to support this nominee. The American Center for Law and Justice is mobilizing on Capitol Hill, demanding Judge Kavanaugh's immediate confirmation. Stand with us on this critical fight. Sign on to our petition calling on the U.S. Senate to confirm Judge Kavanaugh without delay. Add your name to our petition right now online, aclj.org.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. So we got something unique for you today. Our two senior members from our team in our office in Jerusalem are in studio at our media center. Ambassador Rami Levy is with us, and we are talking with him. He is our director general, and David Benjamin, senior counsel for the ACLJ's office in Jerusalem, expert on international law. We were just actually talking about an international law matter, and I think it's worth getting into it. Stuart Roth is here as well, of course, Jordan and I. And we've got some phone lines open for you at 1-800-684-3110. If you've got a question on Israel, this is a great time to ask it because we got the experts right here in the studio. We are constantly, people have been asking during the break about dealing with the UN and the UN funding money, our taxpayer dollars going to the Palestinian Authority, but then a special designation by the United Nations, Jordan, $18 million to fight lawfare. In other words, to engage Israel in international tribunals, a direct grant for them to fight us, basically, in court.
That's right. And I think it goes with what Linda has written in on Facebook, and she wrote, I think it's important for the U.S. to stay in the U.N., even if it's for the sole purpose of standing up for Israel. It's the idea that with the U.N. is sending this money, we're providing, of course, about a quarter of the budget of the U.N. And by the way, that's the official amount. Then we fund hundreds of billions in discretionary amounts to the U.N. So when you said that maybe we're paying for a few million dollars, really the U.S. is the reason why the Palestinian Authority gets $18 million. It's not that we're paying for just maybe a few percent, because the U.N. would not have these kind of discretionary funds to use without the billions over the 20% of their funding that we receive. So I think what ultimately people must understand is that it is worth being there, yes, for the Security Council veto, obviously. That is something you're never going to give up as a superpower in the world. But we can do a lot more, especially with a favorable administration, someone like Nikki Haley at the UN, Ambassador Haley, to rein in and say, you know what, we're not going to fund UNESCO anymore. We're going to pull out of these separate agencies that have done things where we have made threats in the past but not taken action.
Well, I mean, UNESCO basically says the temple site is not a Jewish site, it's a Muslim site. I mean, this is absurd. But something David Benjamin said during the break, and you need to understand this, folks, we are constantly, when I mean constantly, there is not a moment that goes by where our office in Jerusalem, in conjunction with our offices here, are not drafting legal documents defending Israel's right to exist. Right now, in fact, we've got three projects that we're working on simultaneously. One on dealing with the International Criminal Court in The Hague and the lack of jurisdiction over Israel. The second, dealing with the Israeli military justice system, so that's called complementarity, so that the ICC has no authority to oversee any of this. Third, there's this whole, you know, the left is trying to bring this, Israel's an apartheid state, so we're having to deal with this. But David, I think it's important for people to understand that the legal work that we're doing out of your office in conjunction with our U.S. office is literally constantly ongoing. And you said the claims we're having to respond to are really absurd.
Some of them are absurd. In fact, you're never prepared to respond to such allegations. Ethnic cleansing is a good example. The Palestinian population over the years since 1948 has only increased several times over. So it should speak for itself that that cannot be. Apartheid, as you know from my accent, I was actually brought up in South Africa before I immigrated to Israel. I can tell you from firsthand experience, there is no connection between what's in going on in Israel and apartheid. And that should be obvious to anybody who's an objective observer. Yeah, we have to deal with these sort of things.
But Stuart, we've been dealing with this for a long time. And when I say, I mean, I was on the phone with our senior counsel, Skip Ash, yesterday, going through three projects. We're responding to a 700-page complaint from the Palestinian Authority that we don't get to see. And that's how it works in these international tribunals. We're responding to something, you don't get to see the document you're responding to.
Well, the hostility towards Israel around the world in these international tribunals is unbelievable. And the UN is one of them. The Human Rights Council, which is outrageous, which almost exists for the sole purpose of condemning and passing resolutions against Israel. And we do have to watch our tax dollars. You know, we're all talking about tax reform and what this tax reform proposal is doing for this group or this group. But we all know we're all contributing to the UN. And part of those funds are being contributed to causes that are such that they're against the state of Israel. They're denying the state of Israel its civil and human rights to exist as a nation, as a sovereign nation. And those are things that we need to pay attention to. You know, the UN wouldn't exist without the United States,
right?
Because they tried it before. It was called the League of Nations.
It
didn't work out too well because the United States was not a party.
Yep.
David, I mean, this goes to the heart of what we're discussing with the funding. from Louisville, Kentucky, is calling in on line three. David, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hi, David. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks so much. I really appreciate all that you do.
Thanks.
I've got a couple questions for you. If the U.S. is going to help fund the U.N.,
yeah,
can we decide to designate where that money goes just a little bit?
You know, listen, first of all, it's a great idea. Here's the problem. When you walk into the U.N., let me tell you something. You have no – I'm just being honest with you. Somebody – we've been an NGO at the United Nations for over a decade. You have – and Jordan could address this – no idea where your funds are going.
No, it is –
I mean, no idea.
It's like you're literally – the vast hall, you're going into this vast vault of how does this even work? How do the lights run? How does this operate? The door – who gets an office and where? I mean, it is – again, it is bureaucracy on top of bureaucracy on top of bureaucracy on top of bureaucracy. I mean, getting a pass, even if you are already have meetings scheduled, it could take hours or it could take 2 minutes. And again, it's we just had an event with Israel at the United Nations over the summer in New York, at the UN in New York. And literally they knew about 1,000 people were coming. They opened up one magnetometer. And of course, and the Israeli government, which was sponsoring this event, official UN member state, had to push to get another magnetometer so that you could get more people who were standing outside in 90 degrees in New York inside so that the event could start on time. That's the UN in a nutshell. Now, I guarantee you, if this was the Gulf states having a joint meeting and everybody was coming together to celebrate Dubai, every magnetometer would be working. No one would be waiting in line. No pushing and shoving from the UN police. I'm not kidding about that.
Yeah.
Pushing and shoving people in suits and ties because of the animus towards, I think, obviously Israel. And by the way, let's not forget, animus towards our – we may be a major funder, but as much as we are, there's a lot of animus towards the United States as well there.
Absolutely. Interesting. Ted Cruz from Texas said he will continue to press all legislative answers, David's question, all legislative options to ensure U.S. taxpayer dollars – are not used to implement, facilitate, or carry out discriminatory plans against undermining Israel. But let me tell you what we can't rely on. We don't have the luxury of relying, Rami, on legislative enactments. We have to be aggressive and proactive in the defense of Israel. That's something that you've been talking. We've been talking about this for 20 years. We have to stay at the front lines defending Israel's right to exist.
Exactly. And, you know, in the past 9 years since we opened the office in Jerusalem, the actions of the ACLJ have been received by the Israeli government in a way where there is a need for your work, and we cannot stop doing the aggressive work at the UN, at the ICC, and everywhere else because it's a part of Israel's strength.
It's a unique day here at our media center. Let me just say this to our members. This was a thank you to you because we don't get to do this without your support. And you now have seen it firsthand. We have two of our leaders from our office in Jerusalem, your office in Jerusalem, I might say, members of the ACLJ. So your support of the ACLJ is absolutely critical. We're in a matching challenge campaign. Just go to ACLJ.org. Whenever amount you donate, we get a matching gift for it. But as Jordan will tell you, I'll tell you, I'll let Jordan speak for closing this out. It makes a huge difference, and you heard it from two of our experts.
It does, and you have to actually do the work, not just talk about it for our new listeners as well. We do that work. You're seeing our team now in person or hearing them. Make that donation at ACLJ.org and double the impact of your gift. That's ACLJ.org. We will talk to you tomorrow.
This is a critical time for the Supreme Court and our nation. President Trump has nominated a brilliant jurist. Judge Brett Kavanaugh is eminently qualified. The American Center for Law and Justice is mobilizing on Capitol Hill, demanding Judge Kavanaugh's immediate confirmation. Sign on to our petition, calling on the U.S. Senate to confirm Judge Kavanaugh without delay. Add your name to our petition right now online, ACLJ.org.